Blog Talk Radio.
Joined by Mark Schwartz to talk about sports in a couple minutes. He will talk sports and other important life issues with us. We will also be talk some golf, and we're going to talk golf right now. And good for Vaughn Taylor, getting back in the winner's circle, beating Phil, who missed a 5-foot, 1-inch putt down the stretch yesterday at Pebble Beach to win the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. It was a really important win for Taylor, who had no status, hadn't had a tour card really since 2012, and really was able to successfully navigate a Sunday where he was out in front of the leaders, made the four straight birdies late. Phil didn't get off the start. Phil needed to, struggled down the stretch, took advantage of that, and ultimately ended up winning the golf tournament when Phil missed that putt. But this is another positive week for Phil, and this is what we wanted to see. Could we put it together? I really thought Pebble would be the week, and when he started out strong on Thursday, even though it wasn't at, you know, multiple course tournament, can't really tell on day one sometimes who the real leader is. I thought this could be Phil's week, and it was right there for the taking. Two-shot lead going into Sunday, struggled though out of the gate. This game, tee to green, was not that sharp. Let's see what his strokes gained tee to green was on Sunday. It was not his best for sure. And he was able to fight through, made the clutch par putt at 16, had the putt for birdie at 17, and it was basically there. It was right there for the taking, and he was unable to convert that putt when he had to at 18. And gave Vaughn Taylor a victory, and good on Vaughn Taylor. Seems like a good guy. Seems like he's liked by everybody. Strokes gained tee to green on Sunday, -0.792. Phil talked about how he couldn't get it up and down. He was 14 out of 14 from inside 10 feet on Saturday when he gained four strokes in the field putting. Couldn't do it on Sunday. He was barely under a stroke gain, but negative strokes gained tee to green for Phil on Sunday. He put himself in positions he couldn't recover from and ultimately ended up paying the price and not getting the victory. The tour now moves to Los Angeles and the Northern Trust Open, which is not going to be called the Northern Trust Open anymore. It'll be called next year, it'll be the Hyundai Open. I think it's the Hyundai Open. This is a really weird day in terms of sponsorships. We had Northern Trust taking over the Barclays. Stretch here, sorry. Northern Trust taking over the Barclays. Hyundai is taking over for Northern Trust in Los Angeles. And today, the PGA Tour announced that Dean and DeLuca is going to be the sponsor at Colonial. It'll become the Dean and DeLuca Invitational. There we go. You never know who will sponsor your next PGA Tour event. I know we'll be happy about that. That event was near extinction. They had enough money to go for 1 year, but did not have enough money to go forward after this year, so that event gets saved. And everybody's happy there. Mark Schwartz joins us after this. You are listening to Teeing It Up on Blog Talk Radio, the Golf News Net Radio Network, and available anytime on iTunes. We'll be back in 30 seconds. This is Teeing It Up.
Sometimes tough isn't enough. Lou Gehrig was baseball's Iron Man, but lost it all to ALS, a muscle-wasting disease that destroyed his skills and ended his life
Hello?
In just a few years. MDA's been leading the fight to vanquish ALS for decades. Truly effective treatments must be found.
Hello? Good.
Because the battle Lou Gehrig fought is
still
waged in households across America. Call 1-800-577-1717.
Here we go now, Jay Shill. What's going on?
To learn more about what MDA's doing to strike out ALS and save lives.
Back, seeing it up. We're joined by Mark Schwartz, my friend, colleague. A return trip to Seeing It Up. He is the media relations manager for the Somerset Patriots minor league baseball team. He was formerly with the Long Island Ducks, the something Stone Crabs, the Charlotte Stone Crabs in Port Charlotte,
right,
Florida, and the Keene Swamp Bats. You've been around the workings here in terms of minor league baseball teams.
Yeah, it's been a fun ride, Jeremy. Thanks for having me back on the program. I think it's been over a year, maybe like a year and a half since I've been on.
You just work too much. What can I say?
Oh man, I think everyone that you have on the program does a good amount of working. So I'm just trying to do my part.
All right. This is what I call just roll with it interview. I have nothing planned. We're just going to talk sports, and this is what we do, and we're going to have some fun and just roll with it. We are just under 2 hours away from the Grammys. Do you have anything you're looking forward to tonight on Music's Biggest Night, 8 Eastern, CBS?
Oh, well, I was just actually looking up some stuff on the Grammys earlier. I haven't watched the Grammys, to be honest, in a couple of years, pretty much for my own bad on that. But one thing that I did hear that's going to be happening tonight, which should be pretty cool, and I know Lady Gaga is a bit of a polarizing figure for some, but I hear that she's going to be doing a tribute to David Bowie, I believe.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes. I think that's going to be, at the very least, something that a lot of people are going to be talking about for a while. I mean, I think that, personally, I think she's a very talented musician. I think she's a talented artist. And she kind of works with that whole eccentric vibe that, you know, obviously David Bowie preceded her with that. But, you know, she's kind of taken her own music and sort of made her own with it. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how she sort of interprets David Bowie's music and, you know, puts on a tribute where certainly everyone in the country is going to be watching.
Hey, I mean, her national anthem at the Super Bowl was spectacular. Some people are putting up there with Whitney.
Yeah, I mean, well, here's the thing about national anthems, Jeremy. I'm a bit of a traditionalist myself. It's the same thing I say with any sort of team uniform that I'm seeing. But with the national anthem, I like the anthem to be performed pretty much straightforward, as it was originally written. Now, granted, you know, the Super Bowl and a lot of other sport events provide these artists with a stage to, you know, to perform and to show off. But, you know, when it comes to our nation's anthem, you know, I like it to be performed as is and not too much, you know, going off script, if you will. And I think she kind of went off script a little bit, but, you know, she still has a tremendous voice. I mean, what am I going to say? I can't really knock her. It's just, it's how I don't know about you, but it's how I normally like to hear the anthem performed.
Well, first of all, you are in the minority in that. Secondly, I understand when it's, oh, sir, can you see? I haven't sung on the show in a while, so welcome back to people who like when I sing on Ping It Up. Where's Corey and Fletch when we need them? But, you know, if you want to make it like American Idol and put a run in on every end note, that I get. But I thought Taylor was great. I thought, sorry, Lady Gaga. I'm thinking Taylor Swift because she's already won twice tonight in the awards and it's for the show. She, you know, that anthem was great. And that's a great segue into my next question, which is, what did you think of Super Bowl 50 on CBS?
Oh, what did I think about Super Bowl 50? To be honest, Jeremy, I enjoy a good defensive game. I like that. I'm a Jets fan, as you know. We've met up at a Jet game before. So I appreciate good defense. That being said, I thought the game, and I thought everything that surrounded the game, including the halftime ceremony and the commercials, I thought it was a bit of a snoozer.
Are you slighting Beyonce? Are you daring slighting?
I do not dare slight Queen B or Queen Bay or whatever people call her.
I said Queen B, and I got shited big time for it. So be very careful.
So it's Queen Bay or
yes,
I guess
B E Y.
Okay. I will have to write that down. Like, look, she's great. Yeah, I get it. I don't know. I thought the best part of the halftime ceremony was Bruno Mars. I think he's incredibly entertaining.
He is incredibly entertaining, and Uptown Funk took this nation by storm, especially because it's a cross-genre song. And that's one of the things that is so unique about Taylor Swift, is that she's a cross-genre artist. You rarely see cross-genre artists these days. Look at the rest of that halftime show. Beyonce is in kind of this pop R&B-ish world, but she kind of contains herself within there. Coldplay is in this kind of new age rock. Sorry, let me be careful, because new age rock is an actual type of music. But modern, a 90s, 2000s, 2010s rock group. Bruno is modern, obviously, but he has a flair that goes back, a retro vibe that brings in a lot of people.
What were your thoughts specifically on Coldplay's performance? Because I know a lot of people are not huge Coldplay fans. I am willing to make a statement on your show right now to say that I enjoy a good amount of Coldplay songs. So for whoever's out there listening, my name is Mark Schwartz, and I do enjoy some Coldplay songs. But what were your thoughts on their part of the performance?
So I'm a Coldplay fan too. I think what happened is that Beyonce, her presence at a Screen Bay just overwhelms everything, obviously. It takes it completely over. Number two, Bruno, I think that song just took over the moment. But number three, when you end the show the way you do, the way that show did, with Clocks for 5 seconds, Fix You for 5 seconds, one other Coldplay song for 5 seconds, Up Until Up and Up, or leading into Up and Up. Up and Up is such a new song that if you did not realize what that was, you could have thought that was a Michael Jackson tribute because of all the kids who came out to the song that ended that performance back in 93. You could have thought it was somebody else's song. I think Coldplay, and by that point, you're 13 minutes in, people forget that Coldplay just dominated the first 5 minutes of the show. So I think it can be tough. I think they were hurt by the order of operations, to steal a math term, and that if they had ended on a more known Coldplay song, I think that could have given them a better lasting memory. Because as somebody pointed out on Twitter, you know, Coldplay was, or God, who was it? Was it Jimmy Fallon? He's like the dad trying to squeeze in between the two, you know, between the ladies at the party. You know, trying to say, "Hey, I can dance too." I honestly forget who made that reference originally, but that's where I think they got hurt. Was order of operations.
Well, what I wonder, and you know, maybe you would be able to provide a little more insight for this, Jeremy, because you seem a little more attest to the goings on in the, you know, the Hollywood and the entertainment side of things. My impression was that they originally selected Coldplay, and Coldplay just came out with a new album, and, you know, they're doing a international stadium tour or what have you. But I'm imagining that when they announced Coldplay, there was either a decent amount of backlash, or they just didn't feel like they had enough star power that they then reached over to grab Bruno Mars. And granted, Beyonce got a new album coming out also, I guess. But do you feel like it was more of a reaction from, you know, the NFL maybe, or whoever puts on the halftime show, that they needed more star power, that Coldplay wasn't enough?
First of all, is this teeing it up with Jeremy Schilling or teeing it up with Mark Schwartz?
Hey, I'm just trying to have a conversation here, Jay Show.
I haven't spoken with you in a while. Completely fine. I just feel like I'm answering more than I'm asking the first 10 minutes. No, seriously, that's fine. I don't know the answer. What I do know from looking at the trend lines, if you look at the post-Bruce halftime show, because once they got past Bruce and whoever followed Bruce, I forget who followed Bruce. Hold on 1 second, I'll look this up. But in recent years, as they've treaded back modern, but been very careful with how they've treaded back modern in the post-wardrobe malfunction era, it was actually post, it's post The Who. Starting with the Black Eyed Peas Usher / show. They've tried to bring in multiple acts to appeal to multiple audiences while staying modern. And what I think that was, because if you look at it, 2011, as I said, Black Eyed Peas, Usher with some help from Slash. 2012, Madonna, LMFAO, Nicki Minaj, MIA, CeeLo Green, Cirque du Soleil, a bunch of drum, followed by Beyonce with the Destiny's Child reunion, followed by Bruno Mars with Red Hot Chili Peppers, followed with Katy Perry with help from Missy Elliott and Lenny Kravitz, followed by here Coldplay, Bruno Mars, and all of those people, and Beyonce. What this is trying to appeal to multiple constituencies while bringing them in together, which I get. I think what they're trying to avoid is essentially the anti, because here's what happened. The reason why the halftime show became as big as it was, and CBS ran a great documentary on this the night before the Super Bowl, was that there was actually alternative programming being run that people found more exciting than the halftime shows, and that's when they went from marginal audiences to more, marginal acts to more mainstream acts, when they saw the ratings dip during halftime. Now, believe it or not, the ratings actually go up during halftime. And if it's a non-competitive game, the highest ratings actually happen during halftime. The most watched television event in U.S. TV history is the Super Bowl. The most watched thing in American TV history is a halftime show. I don't know if you knew that.
I believe that. Yeah, I do believe that. That makes sense. And that's what I was thinking about also, is that you're just trying to, you know, people who really enjoy football are going to watch the Super Bowl regardless. But, you know, putting on a halftime show that's a little more mainstream, that appeals to, you know, certain people that might not be as into the game itself, you know, it makes sense, because then you're just bringing in so many different demographics and, you know, age groups, and then you could, you know, apply the commercials that apply to those, that appeal to those. You know, it makes sense. So yeah, that definitely checks out.
What's fascinating about this is that if you look through the acts in the post-wardrobe malfunction era, and look at the biggest acts in music, there is one missing. Can you name that person?
In the post-wardrobe era?
Yes, the post-wardrobe malfunction era, there is one big-name artist that has not gotten a halftime show. It is blatantly obvious.
Is it Lady Gaga?
No, it is Taylor Swift. And according to Hollywood, the issue with Taylor Swift is that she is sponsored by Coke, and the current sponsor of the Super Bowl halftime show is
Pepsi.
And that, friends, is the problem. If they can work out something, if the sponsor changes once again from Bridgestone to from Pepsi to somebody else, just like it went from Bridgestone to Pepsi, you will see Taylor do it, and Taylor will get probably the highest-rated halftime show in history. And she's so perfect for it because her squad is so large. And as the 1984 proved, when she with a different artist every night, ranging from her, you know, BFF Selena Gomez all the way up to, you know, the greatest artist of yesteryear, that would blow the roof off this place.
I guess that's some squad goals right there, right? Or whatever the younguns say nowadays with
yeah,
their squad and whatnot.
let me just read to you. No, these are opening acts. These are not who she was joined by.
You've got Kendrick Lamar in their squad also, right? That big rapper guy.
Yeah. Well, there's two different things here, Mark. There's the squad, the Bad Blood squad, which is already a Grammy Award-winning video tonight. That squad is separate from her essentially network, if you want to think of it in a human resource terms.
Okay.
That is a separate thing,
I'll tell you one thing, Jeremy. When I agreed to come on the show tonight, I was not expecting to go into the squad and squad goals of
Here
Taylor
we go.
Swift.
Okay. These are all of the guests who have appeared on the 1989 World Tour. And I'm going to skip over the ones who nobody cares about, but just look at the vast array of it. First of all, we have to start with Frozen and Idina Menzel. We move on to Ricky Martin, Pitbull, D. Wade, Tuvlo, Miranda Lambert, Ellie Goulding, Charlie XCX, Keith Urban, Nelly, Steven Tyler, Leona Lewis, Kelsey Ballerini. I have no idea who that is.
I have
Mick
no
Jagger,
idea who that is.
Alison Krauss, Dierks Bentley, Sydney Sirota, whoever that is, The Band Perry, Wiz Khalifa, Omi, Avril Lavigne, Selena, Justin Timberlake, Lisa Kudrow as Phoebe, Beck and St. Vincent, John Legend, Alanis Morissette, Natalie Maines,
she's got Dixie. Some friends.
No, I have to go through this. Ellen, the list goes on and on. Mary J. Blige, Fifth Harmony, Shawn Mendes, Russell Wilson and Ciara, the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team, Walk the Moon, Sam Hunt. I'm sure put up in here somewhere. Andy Grammer, Jason Derulo, Lord. The point is, her musical network is so vast that the halftime show she would put on might break the internet.
Oh, I'm sure it's an absolute no-brainer to get her on there.
However, sponsorship.
We'll see if it happens.
That was a fun 10 minutes. We spent for 5 minutes. Whatever it is, we spent 5 minutes talking about Taylor Swift.
I came on
the Grammys, 8 Eastern, CBS, hosted by LL Cool J.
I came on here, Jeremy, because I wanted to have fun tonight with you. And so far, we have knocked it out of the ballpark.
That's good. And my next subject is the most important one. Do you have any snow shoveling tips for the folks out there?
Oh, I do have some snow shoveling tips. I know it's tough for a lot of people out there to try to do a full body shovel. Because the snow can get heavy. But number one is try not to put all of the snow shoveling onus on your back, because your back will just kill the next day. I know it's easy to just sort of bend down and not put your legs into it, not sort of squat. But when you just bend down and just put your back into it, then all the weight's on your back. And then when you sort of jerk your body up to an upright, stance to flick the snow in a different direction, your back really starts to hurt. And after the blizzard a couple of weeks ago, or I guess, what is that, like 3 weeks ago now, my back killed me for the next couple of days. So number one, try to do a full body shovel, not just a back shovel. Number two would be try to get out there and get what you can have done before the entire storm is over. I know it's tough when it's blizzarding out like it was during that blizzard, but if you get the opportunity to knock off a solid chunk of snow really before the night's over and before everything really freezes, collects, and gets harder the next day, do that, because it's always going to be easier to shovel the night of than waiting the next day. So those are really my two big ones. And, of course, you need a good shovel. You can't have a flimsy $5 shovel. It works out in the end. Spend the money. Go to your local Home Depot or mom-pop hardware store. Get yourself a nice metal shovel that's not going to have any issues with ice, that you could just plow right through with it, and it'll work out in the end. Because you need that good hardware, Jeremy, if you're going to get some of that snow off the ground.
Jimmy Carter is a Grammy Award winner tonight for Best Spoken Word Album.
Is Bernie Sanders up for his album also?
Isn't that like from 20 years ago?
You brought up Jimmy Carter. I didn't know that Jimmy Carter did something new. Maybe they were bringing back Bernie's album for whatever reason.
No.
To use the hot political topic.
Best Spoken Word Album is actually a very illustrious category. It has been awarded since 1959, and it was won last year by Joan Rivers, in 2014 by Stephen Colbert, in 2012 by Betty White, in 2011 by Jon Stewart and the cast of the staff of The Daily Show. Michael J. Fox won in 2010. Barack Obama won this award in 2008. Jimmy Carter won it in 2007. Barack Obama won this award in 2006. Bill Clinton won this award in 2005. This is a very prestigious category you can win.
Yeah, those are some big names. That's almost as great a group of people.
Who's the most famous person you have ever shaken hands with?
Oh, that is a great question. It probably comes down to three people for me. It would be Sparky Lyle, former New York Yankees Cy Young Award winner, current manager emeritus of the Somerset Patriots. Bud Harrelson, obviously a former New York Met, involved both with the 69 and 86 championship teams. And then who was the third one? I just had it. I don't know. That's a really tough question, Jeremy. I've never really thought about that.
I am clearly the third.
Yes. Yep, Sparky, Bud, and then the one and only Jeremy Schilling, of course. How could I forget you?
You can't forget about me.
I certainly have not, Jeremy. That's the last thing that I would want to do.
I am the most unique person in mankind history.
Do you say this to all of your guests every week?
No. I told you, this is a just roll with it show. There's no script, there's no questions, there's no prep work. We just go with it.
No, that's what I like to hear. You know what? I haven't listened to a good Jay Shill relationship advice column in a while. Valentine's Day was yesterday.
Well, I did a tribute show to it. It was in the summer, I think over Labor Day last year. I did a tribute show to it. So you never know when I'll bring it out. Let's get serious here for the second. There's talk of the Mets being open, Harvey and the Mets being open for an extension. I assume you want that done as fast as humanly possible?
Yeah, I would want that done. You know, Harvey is really the one name that I've sort of grown used to with the Mets up-and-coming rotation that I could see leaving the team because you've got so many young arms that are really going to be around for a while. Harvey's under contractual, he's under contract with the Mets at least through 2018. So I've sort of opened up to the idea of getting rid of Harvey eventually because you just can't physically keep all of these pitchers with the contracts they're going to demand, especially considering the Mets are the Mets. But I would love to see Harvey here long term. My concern has always been that he's going to want to go cross town to the Yankees. But if he really opened up and embraced the Mets and, you know, signed a long-term deal and really become the ace that this team wants long-term without those question marks, that would really be a great thing to see. But I'll believe it when I see it. I don't think that he's really going to be open to signing that long-term of a contract right now.
Mark, I hate to say it, but our show is over.
Oh, that's a bummer.
I know.
I was just about to open up. Yeah. I was about to tell you my goals and my failures and, you know, my dreams and all that stuff. But I guess we'll just have to wait until next time.
Yeah, you can come back next week and we'll talk about that then.
I'm always happy to come on the show, Jeremy.
That's a tease. You know, it's a tease for America. That's
right.
That's Mark Schwartz. I'm Jeremy Schilling. We'll see you next week on Teeing Up with Jeremy Schilling.